I have heard so many incredible lessons here from this exact pulpit. I grew up going here and, of course, left, and I'm now working in Jasper, Alabama, and I absolutely love getting to be there. But I can tell you for sure there is something awesome about being here and getting to speak to you guys. I remember about 8 or 9 years ago when I was exactly where you were. Where I was one of the guys that got on the bus and went to one of the area-wides and just absolutely loved getting to be with so many other fellow Christians that were close by and getting to fellowship with them and just be close to them. So, again, I am so thankful to be here. I'm thankful that each and every one of you is here with us. I want to start off by telling you about a very, very important time in my life. And that was when I was in K-4. When I was in K-4, there was something that was very, very important to me. And that was nap time. Now, it wasn't originally important to me. I really didn't care about nap time. And I'll be honest, I don't really like taking naps even today. Naps are not really a big deal to me. But there was a particular reason that I really liked nap time in K-4. And that was because of the bear. There was this bear that, for some reason, was given to the kid in our K-4 class that napped the best. And so anybody that napped the best was the recipient of this bear. They got to receive this bear. And I don't know why, I don't know what it was that was so bad about me when I took naps, but I never got to win that bear. Every time that I woke up after a nap, you know, just regular napping, you know, waking up from that, every time that I woke up from that, the teacher would always award this bear to somebody else. And so I never got it. So I had a plan. I knew exactly what I was going to do, and I was going to get that bear. What I was going to do is I was going to stay awake and yet put on the best show of pretending to be asleep ever. So that's exactly what I did. So it's nap time and we're all, of course, going to sleep and we're all on those blue and red foam mats that you lay out. I hope you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you don't. So we're all laying down on those and the lights are out and I am putting on the best show of my life and I am just pretending that I'm sound asleep. Of course, it lasted a long time because nap time, you know, lasts a little while and I was completely awake for it, but I stuck through it. I did not open my eyes at all. And finally, it was the end of nap time and it was time for everybody to wake up. This is where I was going to win. This is how I was going to do it. Time to wake up. The lights came on. Everybody started getting up. I could hear them and I just shut my eyes even tighter. And I stayed there, and I did not get up. And then it got to where some of the other kids were like, "Hey, Connor, it's time to wake up." Nope, I'm not waking up yet. So I was still asleep, kept my eyes just completely shut. I think I even fake snored during part of this. Not convincing at all, but I did it. And I knew that I needed this teacher to see me. If I woke up, then maybe the teacher wouldn't see me and would award it to somebody else. So I just kept sleeping, and finally the teacher comes to me, wakes me up, and of course, that's when I wake up, and, you know, I pretend that I'm waking up and realize, oh, you know, was I sleeping this whole time? Wow, what a great nap I just took. That was incredible. And so, sure enough, thank goodness, that day I won that bear, and I got to, oh, I didn't even mention, you got to, like, hold the bear when you were napping. That was, like, the best part of it. So you got the bear, and the next day I got to nap with the bear. So I achieved it. I finally got to do exactly what I wanted. Tonight we are talking about this idea of being awakened to commitment. Awaken to commitment. I know that throughout this year, you guys have been talking about different ideas that go with this idea of being awakened. And this is kind of going along this idea that we cannot achieve the victory that is before us if we live our lives spiritually asleep. If we allow ourselves to be completely apathetic, and don't have that energy, don't wake up to the things in front of us, then we can't live and we can't achieve this victory that is before us. So as we're talking about this idea of commitments, I want you to take a second and think about the commitments that are in your life. Take a second and think about those things. Maybe this commitment that comes first in your mind is a relationship. Maybe it is a particular sport or a hobby or something that you do at school. I don't know. Something that you feel like you're very committed to. I want you to think about that commitment in your life. What is it that you devote your time to? And what is it that you work really hard for? What is this commitment in your life? Now I want you to think about this. What would it take for you to break that commitment? How far would someone or something have to go before you finally said, you know what, that's not worth this commitment that I've made. That's just not worth it. And so, maybe I'm going to not worry about that commitment anymore. Chances are, if you're really committed to something, it's going to take a lot for that commitment to be broken. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to have to be put against that in order for you to no longer have that commitment. We're going to come back to this idea in a little bit, but for now, I'd like for you to turn to Job chapter 1 with me. Job chapter 1. And in Job, of course, we are going to talk about Job. We're going to talk about the story of this man living in the land of Uz. We're going to start at the very beginning, and I want to just kind of talk about his life a little bit with you. Beginning in chapter 1, in verse 1, it reads, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the east." So here we see this description of the man that Job is at this time. We see that he is a man who lived right. He's a man who fled from evil. And most importantly, he is a man who feared the Lord. And we see as we keep reading that he was very blessed in his life. We see the hundreds and the thousands of different animals that he possessed. We see the big family that he had, all the servants that he had. And we even see, if you look at the end of verse 3, we see that he was one of the greatest people of the East. He had a lot of things to his name. Now, obviously, we know what happens to Job. Of course, right after this, right after we learn about the life that Job has in the beginning, we then see, of course, there's a brief discussion between the Lord and Satan. And Satan is granted this ability to test Job. And so he does exactly that. And if you look through verses 13 through 22, this very quick whirlwind of terrible things takes place. We see these messengers come to him one at a time, just one right after the other, and tell him all these terrible things. And everything that he has changes drastically. First, we see that his sheep were taken away. They were completely destroyed. Then the camels, then his oxen, then his donkeys, then his servants, and all of his children. We see that all these things were taken away from him. And it doesn't even stop there. We then move on to chapter 2, and beginning in verse 7, beginning in verse 7, chapter 2, "So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head." Skipping down to verse 9, "Then his wife said to him, 'Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die.'" So here, after all these negative things, we see a couple more negative things take place. We see his health leave him. We see him have boils completely covering his body. But along with that, we also see that he now has a wife who no longer trusts the Lord. All of these things have taken place and just have drastically changed the life that Job had been living. So I want to do something. It kind of changed up this story of Job. I want to actually make it kind of a modern-day interpretation of if this were to take place today. If something similar to this were to take place, I think this is kind of what it would sound like. So if you will, with me, if you'll kind of picture this idea in your mind as we go through this scenario, I want you to think of this awesome, godly, church-going family that is just completely centered around Christ. When you look at this family, they have just this Christ-likeness. They have this kindness. They have this love that just surrounds them. And every time you think about them, you just think about what awesome people they are and how they're living their lives for God. So you have this family, and they are, I'll go and tell you, they're very well off. They have a lot of money. They're quite wealthy. They have a lot of children. They have a very, very big family. And they're living their life for God. And one day, the husband and wife, they decide that they're going to go just go run some errands. The older children are old enough to be able to watch the younger ones, so they leave them there at the house, and they go and they start running these errands. And as they leave, the husband receives a phone call, and he learns that his bank account has been completely cleaned out. They don't know how, they don't know why, but all of his money is gone. His investments, everything that he's had, his savings, it's gone. All of it's gone. So, of course, the family's worried about this. But right after that, there's another phone call. And this husband and wife are told that their house is on fire. And everything inside of it is gone, including their children. Everything completely taken away. And then immediately after this, they get yet another phone call. And the husband learns from his doctor that he has a very serious illness and he needs to start treatment for this immediately. And after all of these things, the wife finally just can't handle it anymore, and she decides that this God that they've been living for is no longer her God, is no longer the person that's in control of her life, and that she wants no part in him. And the man is left with so many things missing in his life, with so many hardships that he now has to face and go through in his life. You see, Job loses everything. Job loses everything that he has. If you want to think of a worst case scenario for your life for things to go wrong, it's basically the life of Job. And he loses everything, and he mourns over this. And he sits in silence for 7 days. And he listens to a lot of these friends tell him some not so great advice. You see, Job loses everything but his commitment. Job loses everything in his life except for the commitment he has to his God. And if there's nothing that we learn in the book of Job, I hope that you do learn this one thing. And that's the importance of our commitment to our God. The importance that plays in our lives. I want you to think back on these commitments in your life. To think back at those commitments. When I told you, you know, think of these different things, you know, whatever it is, relationships or a sport or a club or an activity, whatever it might be. When you think about and reflect on those commitments in your life, a lot of times we're aware of the limitations that we place on those. We're very aware that we will go so far, but once it gets to this point, that's where we draw the line. And that's where that commitment can no longer be something that we hold on to. I think a lot of times we place those same commitments on our God. We place those same commitments on our spiritual lives. And a lot of times when we look at our lives, if it looks like it's too hard, we give up. If we look at the life of Job, Job at any point could have said any of these things. He could have said, you know, this is not what I signed up for when I chose to follow God. When I chose to be a God-fearing person, this is not what I had planned for my life. Being a God-fearing man, being someone who follows God, it's not easy. And he could have done what Satan wanted him to. He could have chose to follow what Satan had been tempting him the whole time to do, to just curse God. He could have done exactly what his wife was telling him to do at this point. But he didn't. He faced all of these terrible things in his life, and he chose to keep his commitment. And just like Job, we have the same choice. And we have to make the same choice in the same way that Job did. Because just like Job, we can choose to say, this isn't what I've signed up for. Being a Christian is not easy. I thought it was going to be way easier than this. It's difficult. I don't want to do this anymore. We can easily do that and we can dismiss it. We can draw the line of our commitment. We can make it something conditional. And once it's just too tough, we give up. But then we aren't committed to Christ. And Christ deserves a lot from us. Christ is a man that is so committed to us that he placed no boundary between us. Christ is fully committed to us and to our lives. And he's proved that. He's been so committed to us that he gave up his life for our sake. Christ has done so many things for us in our lives. And we have to recognize that. At the end of Job, chapter 42, we see that Job is restored of what he has. Not only that, we see that the thousands of different animals that he has, he's given that many more animals, but double that. He's also given 7 more sons and 3 more daughters, and these daughters are even known to be the most beautiful daughters that in the land. And so he's given all these different things back, and he's blessed even beyond what he had at first. But before this, something else takes place. There is a conversation between Job and the Lord. And in this conversation, Job recognizes the power and the knowledge of God. He isn't told exactly why these things happened to him, but he understands that because of who God is, he can trust and have so much faith in God. Because of who God is in his life, he's able to completely put his trust in God and say, I understand that you know what is best for me. And that's what Job does. And even though Job is blessed and given so many more things beyond what he had initially, I believe that Job would have stayed committed without even receiving these things. Job was the kind of man who would be committed for the rest of his life, even if he had nothing. He would have still stayed faithful to his God. He would have still stayed committed. If you will, turn to James chapter 5. James chapter 5. We see a very important verse here in James chapter 5. In verse 11... We get to see James mention this idea of who Job was. And in verse 11, this is what he says. Verse 11, behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. Here we see Job referred to as a man of steadfastness. If you take that word steadfast, it can mean a few other things. One of those is this idea of being unshakable, unwaverable. But another way to define the word steadfast is committed. Job was recognized to be such a committed man to the Lord. And even when all these things were taken from him, it did not change that. You see, in our lives, even if we end up with nothing, even if our life fits this modern-day depiction of the story of Job perfectly, and we end up with an empty bank account, and we lose our entire family, and we lose our health all at once. And maybe you even identify with that a little bit. Maybe some of these difficulties sound a lot like the difficulties that you're facing in your life. The things that are really hard to get over. The things that kind of stop that commitment. Even if we end up with nothing in our lives, we still owe Him everything. We still owe our God every single ounce of ourselves, because we've already been given much more than we deserve. We are here. We are in this room. We are together. We are okay. But more than that, we have a hope. We have this chance, this opportunity to live our lives for our Creator, to live our lives for this man that died for us so that we can be with Him forever. And regardless of how difficult today or tomorrow might seem, we still have that. And because of that, we owe Him everything, even if we have nothing. You see, in K4, I won that bear. I got that bear, at least for a day. But after that, once I had the bear and, you know, I got to hold it for 30 minutes while I napped, a couple days later, I went back to sleep. I stopped focusing on what I was trying to attain, and I went back to sleep. You know, it was just a bear. It wasn't a big deal to me. After the fact, of course. But every day we begin by waking up. Every day begins with us waking up. In fact, if you tell somebody about your day, you know, hey, how was your day? You will respond and start with, well, I woke up. How you started. Every day begins with us waking up. And yes, physically, we wake up every morning, but also spiritually. Every day begins with waking up. And every day we have a choice. You see, we can choose to follow our Creator unconditionally. We can choose to wake up and follow Him and not put any limitations on our commitment to Him. When we wake up, we can say, I'm going to live this day for Christ. Regardless of what's going to take place this day, regardless of the disasters that may be coming my way, I'm going to stay committed to Him and I'm going to live for Him. Or we can choose to stay asleep. Sure, we wake up physically, but spiritually we are asleep. We go through the motions of the day. We choose to fall back into our habits, into our desires, into our temptations that we so commonly face. We can choose to wake up, or we can choose to stay asleep. As I wrap up this evening with you, I want to ask you a couple questions. The first one, What did you choose today? When you woke up this morning, sure, physically you're awake. I hope you guys are physically awake right now. But spiritually, chances are, you know, it's a Sunday. You're going to be with the church. You're going to be going to an area-wide tonight. That's fast forward to, you know, right now. You're going to be around all these people. You're going to be encouraged. You're going to be lifted up. So, sure, I'm going to be spiritually awake. I'm going to uphold these commitments that I've made to my God. But what did you choose today? Did you choose to be spiritually awake? And my second question to you, what will you choose tomorrow? And really, that question continues to ask itself every day. What are you going to choose tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that? Are you going to choose to be awakened to your commitments? Regardless of how difficult your life may get, are you going to continue to stay spiritually awake and to stay committed to what God wants from you, to what Christ has asked from you? Again, we owe Him everything. Everything. Maybe you are here tonight, and you feel like you are not committed. Or maybe you feel like you have a lot of these conditions to your commitment where a lot of times it's just a little bit too difficult, so you're not really as committed as you feel like you need to be. Maybe you're here and you haven't yet made the biggest commitment of your life. And you know that in order to be committed to Christ, that you need to become a part of the church and put Him on in baptism. Whatever it might be, I hope that you understand and that you recognize your commitment to your God. Whatever it might be, whether it be for prayers or encouragement, we ask that you come forward now as we stand and as we sing.